Hello again and welcome to Musings on Golf, where stories about U.S. Ryder Cup captains' picks are at the forefront of our show today. We're also going to be joined by Denny McCarthy, who had a terrific season on the PGA Tour this year and will certainly be someone who's going to have a chance to play in Ryder Cups down the road. I'm Kelly Elbin along with Bob Bupka. So Bob, Captain Zach Johnson indeed picked his six players to round out his team. Sam Burns, Ricky Fowler, Brooks Koepka, Colin Morikawa, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Thomas to go along the six who had made it. Okay, Bob, today of those six, anyone really shock you, surprise you that you didn't see coming?
Well, I didn't see Justin Thomas coming, and very good friends with Zach Johnson, and I have to defer to his expertise in picking guys, but I would ask him, Zach, how many of your picks in a 72-hole stroke play event would beat Dustin Johnson? Probably the answer is none. And just of late, Keegan Bradley winning two times on the PGA Tour, not on the team. Lucas Glover winning two times on the PGA Tour, not on the team. Justin Thomas, he's part of the inner circle, and there's no denying that. And
he is.
There's allegiance amongst those guys, and that's why Justin Thomas is on the team.
He also has had a very good Ryder Cup record. He's 6-2-1 overall. He's 3-0-0 in four balls. He hasn't lost in three singles matches. And Zach referred to him as the heart and soul of the team room, based on those appearances. I think he very clearly, Captain Zach Johnson, will he'll live or die with Justin. Because he's going to play a lot. He's going to play a lot with Jordan Spieth. I agree with you on the surface. I have to imagine Keegan Bradley, who was very open about thinking about the Ryder Cup every day, had to be devastated with that call. And I'm sure there is feeling among those left out. And I don't know Lucas Glover, but man, he played so well down the stretch. But there has to be a feeling, Bob, of, well, so it was already a done deal. You had already picked JT, so it really was a question of five open spots. I think that's a tough one for guys.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Lucas Glover, it's not that he just won twice over the past few weeks. He's a former U.S. Open champion.
Yeah.
He had the ability to withstand the pressure on a very difficult golf course, by the way, Beth Page.
Right.
And he prevailed. I mean, Lucas Glover deserves to be on this team. He's not. I think Keegan Bradley deserves to be on this team. He's not. I think Dustin Johnson certainly deserves to be on this team. I mean, good golly, Miss Molly, we want to win. And I got some other questions that I'm going to defer to you because of your long expertise with the PGA of America, not only with yourself working for them, but your father being president of the PGA of America. I can't think of a better guy that I can get my questions out to.
Well, I'm happy to answer anything you want to throw my way. Let me just point out a couple things. The U.S. obviously was dominant at Whistling Straits 2 years ago. Of that 12-man team, seven are back. Morikawa, Koepka, Thomas, Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Spieth, and Scheffler. So that leaves five who are new, four of whom are rookies. Ricky Fowler returns. And he certainly deserves it. What did I see? 18 top 25 finishes this year on the PGA Tour for Ricky Fowler. The other four guys, Sam Burns, I think he really clinched the spot by winning the WGC Dell Technologies match play in the spring. He dominated that. He won the championship match 6-5 over Cam Young, who also was left off the team. Brian Harman, I love the bulldog, pun intended, mentality of the Open champion. I think he's going to be great, but he's a rookie. Max Homa really wants to represent the U.S. I think he's going to play well, but that's a big ask, again, going to Italy for your first time out. And then Wyndham Clark, who played great at L.A. Country Club and winning the U.S. Open. Can he carry that over against a very hostile crowd? And I think that's, we've talked about this, Bob. It's 30 years. We've talked ad nauseum about this since the U.S. has won the Ryder Cup. These guys are up against a big-time crowd that hasn't hosted a Ryder Cup in a good number of years because of COVID. They're going to be ready, and they've got, clearly, with Victor Hovland and Rory and some others who are playing well. The European team is kind of heavy-loaded with really good players. The back end, I'm not sure, but, boy, our guys are going to have to be super ready to go against a tough crowd on a golf course that they really don't know that well.
All right, Kelly, let me ask you this, because you've been fortunate enough to be in team rooms when yeah. you were with the PGA of America. And, yeah. you know, I hear a lot of talk this morning in the captain's picks about team room, team room, right. team room. This is a good team room, team room, team room. Mm-hmm. I have never yet heard a losing captain say they had a better team room than we did. You know, the worst thing I hear, and I hear it constantly, is they made more putts than we did. You know, I mean, that seems to be the it's okay if you played well and they made more putts and you lost. So those two things. First address the team room. Do you think that aspect of Ryder Cup is overplayed?
Not necessarily. I do think that there is value there to guys knowing one another, having relationships. And let's face it. Look, Justin Thomas is going to play a lot of matches, if not all of them, with Jordan Spieth, his buddy. And that's a tough combo to break up. So, yes, whatever may transpire in the team room and all that is great. But they know each other. They've been successful in Ryder Cup play. I anticipate that they will, at least one of them will play well, and they'll balance off one another. I understand your frustration, and I think it's great. I think it's what the Ryder Cup is really all about in a lot of ways, is you want to win. You want to put the best team out there possible. I also think that it's good to have new blood coming in. And I think it's exciting, honestly, to have somebody like Brian Harman, who is a great putter. He's made so many putts to win the Open Championship. I think it's great to see a young guy like Sam Burns, who clearly is a terrific putter. But I get the frustration. I don't think it's overplayed, but it's always challenging to mesh sort of these 12 guys into a team. A lot of the guys do live down here in South Florida. They've gotten to know one another. I think that's a plus. And I still think, at least on paper, this is a better full 12-man team than the team that the Europeans are going to put together.
Boy, do I disagree with that. I mean, are you kidding me? Who's playing better than Victor Hovland? Who on the American team would you put up against Victor Hovland right now and expect to win?
No one, because he's the best player in the world right now. Now, Scottie Scheffler is the number one ranked on the official World Golf Ranking player in the world right now. That would be, I think you'd have to say, the match on Sunday in singles at Marcus Simeone outside of Italy. But again, it's a top-heavy group there with really big-time players, with Rory and Hovland at the top of the list. I think Zach looked at numbers. Again, you have to understand, and you know this, Bob. You've covered a lot of Ryder Cup. It's a different ball game than the 72-hole stroke play that we're used to seeing. It's emotions. It certainly is putting. It certainly is coming through in clutch, tough, demanding situations. He looked at the numbers, and fair or unfair, I think he had had Justin Thomas penciled in, because he was the easy choice in his mind based on the experience. I would say that the one guy, Sam Burns, of the group that was picked today, in my view, Sam Burns is even though he won the match play, he's the surprise. I don't know why Keegan Bradley was left off. I likely would have picked Keegan Bradley, just the way he's playing and his passion for it. What Zach is hoping for is that Sam Burns brings to the U.S. team what Scheffler brought to the team last year. He was somewhat of a surprise pick, if you will, going into Whistling Straits, and he played great. This is what, as I mentioned, this is the fun stuff about the Ryder Cup, to be able to talk about it. I love that you and I disagree on this. The proof will be in the pudding, and Captain Luke Donald for the Europeans has 6 picks to make next Tuesday. Oh, and by the way, Bob, unfortunately, we had many entries into our contest for a dozen Titleist Pro V1s, and not one got it correct. That's how difficult it was to gauge exactly what Captain Johnson was thinking.
Yeah, well, it was going to be a tough call, and but still, I want to go back to one other point that I made.
Yeah.
Am I to assume, based on what I listened to, that all the other sports, baseball, football, their locker room is never mentioned, and it doesn't matter what kind of locker room they have. It's what they do out on the field, and in golf, it's what you do out on the course. You know, there's been so much made over the last 20 years about ping pong tables being in the team room. And
right.
Boy, what a way to bond that is. And, you know, when you get to that first tee, all of that means nothing. It means nothing. I you know, if they didn't have a team room, you think they're going to play worse or better? Or it's probably not going to affect them whatsoever. They just go out like they normally do. They don't leave a team room when they go to play the final round of the Masters.
Bob, I'll give an example. I think Glover, for Zach Johnson, I think he probably looked at Glover as almost a two-week flash in the pan. And yes, he won both times, but I think he lacked a trust in the unknown in Lucas as compared to Justin Thomas, who has won, who has proven. So, yeah, I listen to that stuff about the team room some. It sort of goes in one ear, out the other. Does it matter? Yes, it matters. Does it ultimately matter? No. The proof is what happens on the golf course. But I still think he's got a pretty good team. I mean, I really do. I think Sam Burns could really be the surprise of the whole group, much like what happened, as I said, with Scheffler 2 years ago. I kind of like the team, but, man, I get why people would say, oh, it's a closed shop. He's already made these. Yeah, he had already determined. He told you. Zach Johnson told you that. He had already determined pretty much that JT was in. So that makes it tough for the spots remaining.
Well, I take exception to the fact that you insinuated, at least, that Zach Johnson refers Lucas Glover as just a little bit of a flash in a pan. I go back. He's a U.S. Open.
I know.
Open champion. I don't know any other flashes in the pan that are U.S. Open champions.
I don't mean to minimize that, but he's a flash in the pan this year in that he just burst on the scene, and he doesn't have any real Ryder Cup history to fall back on for Zach. And Zach is a guy who's comfortable with the people he knows and the people he's comfortable with. He told you that today. It is. It's very chummy. It's very clubby, and that can be a turnoff for a lot of people. So the pressure will be on. Look, I don't like this whole idea of the captain with 6 picks. It used to be you would hear talk of, well, what difference does the captain have to make? Well, he makes a lot of difference. Now he picks half the team. I think it's way too much. But that's the system right now, and it puts the onus on him to get it right. And if he falters on this, it'll be a big miss. And if he falters on this and the U.S. loses, you might see them going back to only 4 picks in a couple of years. Those things fluctuate a lot. I'm not a big fan of it, but again, I'll take 5 of the 6 that he picked today. I'm pretty comfortable with.
Well, in closing, I just think about Justin Thomas. He realizes that Zach Johnson has gone way out on a limb, putting him on the team. He's not playing well.
Yeah.
And now he's going to go and try and play exceptional all of a sudden. You know, I think there's added pressure on Justin Thomas, probably more so than anybody on the team.
You are right, I would think. I would imagine he's already committed to playing at least, one PGA Tour event before Ryder Cup. And when I read that, by the way, and I saw he was committed to play – is it the Fortinet event out in California? To me, that was a sign he'd already made the team. Why is it, he wouldn't play that event otherwise? He was pretty much assured. Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure. Sure there is. And he has to step it up. I would say if anybody would be able to respond to it, you've got, in his case, a 2-time PGA champion and a guy who knows about playing over there. He didn't win, but they got to make putts, man. They got to get off to good starts. They got to get off to a good start on Thursday. There's going to be a heap of pressure on them from the Europeans who are. I just think they're laying in wait. I think it's going to be a tough ask. I don't know. I don't care even if they pick Keegan Bradley today and Dustin Johnson. In my opinion, it's going to be a tough ask for this 12 to win on paper. Okay, we've heard this a lot. I think they're better. The U.S. is a tough ask to go over there after they demolished and really almost embarrassed the Europeans 2 years ago to find a way to win in Italy.
Well, on paper,
I know. Okay, so let me give, we've been having some fun with some Bob's story of the week, and I understand, and I was over there at Glen Eagles in 2014 when the U.S. lost the Ryder Cup, and you have a good one from that week at Glen Eagles in Scotland, huh?
Absolutely incredible. We got word from Talk Sport, the outfit that I work for while I'm in Europe, that I was going to be staying on the property at Glen Eagles and that I would be able to walk to the action.
Sure.
And I said, what is it? And they said, we got you a hotel room. I said, a hotel room? I didn't know there were any additional hotel rooms. They said, well, we just built this one in 3 weeks. And officially it became known as the Snooze Box Hotel. The only hotel room I've ever been in my life mm-hmm. where I could sit on my bed, turn on my bathroom sink, flush the toilet, and I'm still sitting on my bed. It was next to a sardine can if I've ever been in it. And then Janice and I sharing that room, we knew when we both got in there, we had to stay for at least 8 hours to get the strength to get out.
But again, it was really close to the golf course, right?
Very close. And in all honesty, with the convenience of not driving and being able to walk to the golf course, I would do it at every single major event I ever covered. Forget the luxury and forget comfort. Yeah. It was a working Snooze Box Hotel.
I love it. I'll tell you somebody who hasn't been asleep, and that's Victor Hovland. Our guest a little bit later, Denny McCarthy. Well, he came up a little bit short to Victor in a playoff at the Memorial this year. That was one of several wins for Hovland, these back-to-back wins, wrapping up the Tour Championship, Bob. And we heard this from Lee Trevino, right? When Trevino was on with us a little while ago, Lee talked about how much he thinks of Hovland, and we've got that clip.
I watch when he plays. Nothing bothers him. He can make double bogey. He can three putt from 4 feet. He can do whatever. Not one time has he blamed the golf course or blamed the grass or it didn't break this way or it's supposed to go this way and all that stuff. I mean, he is totally business. And I'll tell you something. He's going to be there a while. They're going to have to mess with him every time they play. He is a dangerous guy when it comes to playing. I mean, he is really, I mean, he's one of the best out there. No question about it. Gentlemen, I mean, he really is thankful and he takes the game very serious. Very serious. Yeah.
Yeah. Dangerous. And he does. He takes it very seriously. Hey, Bob, look, he had a 6-shot lead going to the final round at Eastlake. And he was ready with the game plan and from the get-go. He really never let anybody back in, per se. And here's what Victor had to say after his second big win in as many weeks.
The game plan was trying to play as boring as possible. Obviously, it was sweet to make a birdie on the first hole and make a really clutch par save on number two. And after that, I felt really in control of my game. Sometimes it just happens easily, but it never feels easy. It's fun when every single part of your game comes together. It comes back to the belief. I believe now I can get the ball up and down when I miss the greens. And I can play smart, middle of the green, and if I make a couple putts, you know, we're right there. But I'm not going to give this tournament away.
Bob, do you see any flaw in this guy's game?
I think his game is impeccable. I love his work ethic. He won the U.S. Amateur at Pebble Beach. He has unbelievable talent, and he is a great ambassador for the game. I mean, we can only hope and pray that everybody that's playing the game of professional golf has the standards of Victor Hovland. He has made his country of Norway very, very proud, and I'm proud to be associated with the prowess of Victor Hovland.
Yeah, and you get the sense he's going to make the continent of Europe very proud at the end of next month, and I think the Ryder Cup ends on the 1st of October, based on the way he's playing. He very well could just carry them to victory. Before we get into it with Denny McCarthy, I got a shameless plug. Good buddy of mine, Rhett Butler, who I grew up playing junior golf with. Yes, his name is Rhett Butler. Sent me a pair of golf shoes, Bob. I know you get some good stuff every now and then, but these new golf shoes from his company called William & Harry, they're lightweight, deerskin, water-resistant golf shoes. They are as comfortable a pair of golf shoes I've ever played on. And, a little fashion-forward, Bob, because you know I like that. Little white and blue mix. Good-looking on the feet. Performance-wise, they're fantastic. And it really was nice. A portion of the profit of every online sale goes towards suicide prevention and mental health. His website is williamandharry.com. Give them a try, and the shoes are so comfortable. Got to have great golf shoes. Got to have the look, Bob.
Now you're officially in the Shameless Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Because Red called me and asked me, what size do you think Kelly wears? And I said, nobody could fill those shoes.
Correct. Absolutely true. Hey, before we get with Denny McCarthy, we talked to him yesterday, Bob. I was impressed with Denny. Kind of a no-nonsense guy as well. Boy, he had a terrific season. I know that he desperately wanted to make the Ryder Cup team. What a putting stroke. And I think just what a general attitude he has. He's not the longest hitter, but boy, he plays the game so well, and he's very confident in his ability.
And that's one of the attributes going back to Victor. He plays with heart.
Yeah.
And you don't see that. You know, I mean, most guys, they play with their skill. But Victor not only has the skill, you know, he did win a tournament when he was at Oklahoma State, the Eastlake Cup. So he had a little familiar feelings when he got down there for the Tour Championship. But in retrospect, that probably as fine a performance over 72 holes as we're likely ever to see.
Well, much like Victor, Denny is a guy who loves to play the game, plays a lot of it, is a real grinder. And we had some great discussions with him about trying to be a little bit longer off the tee and about how much passion he brings to the game. And you're going to hear from Denny McCarthy right after this.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, through my junior golf days, I got to know a terrific guy by the name of Dennis McCarthy. And over the last few years, along with a lot of other folks, I've watched his son Denny become one of the rising stars on the PGA Tour. He had a terrific 2022-23 season, and he's with us today. Denny McCarthy, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Looking forward to talking with you guys, going over my year and, you know, the near future here.
Hi, Denny. Bob Bupke here, and I echo the sentiments of Kelly Elvin that we truly appreciate you taking time out. I'm going to go off script here just a little bit because I don't remember this question ever being asked or answered by a touring pro. How can you describe how good the players that you're playing against really are?
It's a good question. They're very good. I don't know if you watched yesterday the final round, but you know, Victor and Xander put on a you know, they put on a clinic. They showed why they're a couple of the best players in the world, and Victor showed why he was deserving to win a FedEx Cup championship. I mean, he drove it on a string. His iron play was elite, and his putting was elite as well. So that's when you watch the top guys do everything well, it's pretty fun to watch. You know, one of the questions was, did I watch? Yeah, I watched, because I feel like I can learn a thing or two. And you know, just watching those guys play yesterday was kind of motivating for me, just to be like, okay, I want to get to that elite level. I'm definitely not quite there yet, but I'm definitely on my way.
What do you think will get you there?
I need to drive it a little better. My driving has made a lot of improvements. I think if I could gain some distance, I'm not talking crazy distance, but if I could gain a little distance, I think that would help. Most of the top guys I play with, they drive it past me. So they're hitting shorter, a little shorter irons in, able to attack just a little bit more. And I'm maybe forced to play a little bit more conservatively on these bigger golf courses where, you know, you have longer length par fours.
Yeah.
So I think maybe just a little distance off the tee, and then just a little more consistency with, you know, the scoring clubs, you know, 8 iron and down. I had a pretty good year with my wedges and short irons, but I think I could become a little more sharp with them. Just when you have a wedge or a short iron in your hand, those are clubs to attack. I think sometimes I was a little too conservative, maybe just not fully trusting in my game or my swing at that point. And then there's times where I felt really comfortable and aggressive, and I was hitting, you know, really quality shots with 8 and 9 irons and wedges. So I think I kind of went through some spurts this year. I would like to just kind of, you know, even that out and be a little bit more consistent throughout the year with my scoring clubs.
Yeah, Denny, at the elite level that you are and against the competition you're up against, how do you go about trying to increase that length off the tee? Are there workout regimens? Is there speed training? What do you do?
Yeah, it's a lot of workout and how, you know, efficiently my body is moving. So my coach and I, Brian Cregan, you know, I've worked with for 2 or 3 years now. If I'm, you know, he's all about trying to get me to move my body efficiently and properly. And when I'm doing that, the speed comes somewhat naturally for me. Now, you know, that's, you know, saying that's probably, you know, average PGA Tour speed, maybe slightly above. When I'm not moving very well, my speed decreases just because I'm not getting, you know, the torque, the force that my body needs to create the speed. So when my body's moving well, I feel like it's, you know, I can move it out there, but there's definitely, you know, something missing where I think I need to get a little bit stronger. And maybe, you know, I think I'm going to look into maybe doing some exercises, maybe a few speed training drills. I don't want to do it so much to where, you know, I'm not looking for 25 yards here. I'm talking in the ballpark of maybe just adding 10 yards or so, my baseline drive, which would be huge. I mean, that would be a club of distance. And then maybe to, you know, reach in the bag and, you know, grab another gear, would be nice to have too. So maybe, just, you know, this fall, I'm going to spend a lot of time on working on my body, improving my body, making sure it's really healthy and ready to go, getting a little stronger, maybe doing a couple new exercises, throwing some new wrinkles in to just kind of gradually increase some speed.
Denny, let me ask you this. Let's suppose you had a son that was, you know, hell-bent on playing on the PGA Tour, and the two traits that you had to choose for your son, one would be he would possess enormous talent, or two, he would possess a work ethic unparalleled. Which would you want him to be?
I would say the work ethic unparalleled. I mean, it depends how much that person with talent works, but you know, I've always been a hard worker and always looking for ways to get better. So I would want my son to be very hardworking as well. Hopefully he would have some talent in there. I don't think, you know, I think I was born with some pretty good talent. You know, my whole side of the family plays golf and, you know, a lot of good golfers in my family. So, I think I had some talent in there and I worked really hard and, you know, I think a little combination of both has gotten to me to where I am now, but I would want my son to be really hardworking and, you know, never leave anything to chance.
You know, you had a pretty good year last year, earning a little over north of $6 million. How would you assess your 2022-23 season?
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little disappointed with how my year finished. You know, I really wanted to make the tour championship. It was a sour feeling leaving last year, not making the tour championship. And it felt just about the same or worse leaving this year. I also wanted to be on the Ryder Cup team. Once I got in that conversation, that's something I really wanted. Unfortunately, just, you know, a few injuries that kind of loomed and kind of peaked at a wrong time. And I wasn't able to play the golf that I really wanted to over the last month or month and a half. And, that's a bummer, but now, you know, I'm not going to leave that to chance in a situation this next year coming up. I'm really going to get on top of my body this year and try and it's hard. I've played a lot of golf over the last 6 or 7 or 8 years. I've put a lot of miles in pro golf and, you know, hopefully going forward, I won't play as much as I have the last few years. Hopefully I can spend a little more off time at home, where I am able to work on my body a little bit more. Cause I think that's just it's a big key to kind of being out there and playing the golf you want to play and having a long career. So, it kind of, you know, I kind of got bit by that bug a little bit this year and I don't want that to happen again.
You know, Denny, people watching, I saw that, you know, Victor made $18 million, but he also got a 5-year exemption onto the PGA Tour. Could you talk a little bit about the magnitude of that 5-year exemption?
Yeah, I don't think he's probably not too worried about that. You know, he's a top player in the world, and I'm sure he believes he's going to be out here for a long time. I'm sure he's happy that he's got the 5 years in his pocket, but I don't think that's something he was really worried about. It was a pretty good day for him. He won $18 million and yeah, he got, you know, he gets all the perks with that. I don't think that's something he's necessarily concerned about because I think he knows he's, you know, towards the top of the game.
You know, it's amazing. I want to jump in here, Kelly, just for a second.
Sure.
They were talking to Victor, about the magnitude of that first place check, and the reference was, well, this is going to be life altering. And his caddy chirped up and said, you know, it's not just life altering for the player that wins, but the man on the bag is going to make more money than he ever thought he could possibly make. And I think caddies are probably the unsung heroes out there.
Yeah, caddies definitely have a huge part in what we're doing, you know, that they're the only ones out there with us inside the ropes besides ourselves. So, you know, it's a team effort out there for sure. I'm sure Victor's caddy's very happy over the last 2 weeks. Victor's made him a lot of money, but I'm sure he helped Victor a ton in these last few weeks. So he earned it. So, caddies definitely play a very important role in what we're doing.
How's that relationship with your caddy? How does that work from a week in, week out relationship in terms of what your demands are of him, yardage, reading putts, etc.?
We've had a really good relationship. We've been together just over 7 years now. He caddied for me for about a year and a half on the Korn Ferry, and yeah, he's been with me ever since on the PGA Tour. And you know, he knows what I like, what I don't like. Majority of the time I'm reading my own putts. Sometimes I feel like if I'm not seeing him well, he's a good player himself. He played professionally for a little while and So he's got a good eye for the game. He's very helpful in terms of equipment stuff. He knows a lot more about that stuff than I do. So like going back to green reading, I'll call him in if I don't, if I feel like I'm not seeing him well, because he does read the greens pretty well. I just don't like doing it all the time just because, you know, I am putting's a strength of my game, and I like kind of being in my own little process bubble for that. And sometimes I just don't like hearing other opinions. I like, you know, seeing my going with my gut instinct and getting up and hitting it. And if that's not working very well, I'll call him in to read some putts, to change it up a little bit. And he's, you know, he's really good on the bag, making sure waters are in the bag. I drink a lot of water, he's mixing up some hydration drinks. He's a big part. So he's done a great job. And at the end of the day, he lets me able to just, you know, all I have to do is go out there and play golf, hit the shots. And, you know, he helps me do that.
Denny McCarthy, who finished 33rd on the FedEx Cup points list this year, joining us on Musings on Golf. Denny referring to Derek Smith, who's been with him, as you said, for the past 7 years. You mentioned about your putting, and that's what people know you for. You've consistently ranked high in pretty much all the putting categories, Denny. Did putting and putting well, did that come easily to you, or did you learn to be a great putter? How has that process evolved over time?
Yeah, I think, you know, I wasn't always a great putter. I struggled in junior golf. I remember having some tournaments where I would have, you know, I would have 36 to 40 putts, which is obviously not very good at all. I got a couple lessons here and there. But ultimately, I just kind of started to figure out that I have really good hand-eye coordination, and that I'm a good athlete, and I have really good instincts, and I kind of just let that take over. And, you know, I haven't had a putting coach. I've done everything putting wise on my own. I've kind of created my own little process and bubble and world, whatever you want to call it. But I've kind of developed and kind of fine tuned my process here and there over the years. But, I kind of just let, you know, I've played golf for a long time now, so a lot of it is just, you know, it's green reading, it's instinct, it's touch, it's feel, it's matching the speed with the line, it's creativity, it's artistic. It's not like, you know, I was trying to make it, I feel like, a science back then, like, oh, my stroke's not good. Like, it's, you know, I don't care about my stroke now yet. My stroke is good. It's not perfect. It's not, you know, I don't have the best putting stroke in the world. It's efficient. It works for me. I know my tendencies on certain putts. So I just feel like I'm very, when I kind of get to the green, that's kind of like when the party starts. You know, I talked to Dr. Atella a decent amount, and he's helped me, you know, in some of the times where I feel like I've been, you know, haven't putted great, I talk to him and he kind of frees me back up, and he keeps it very simple. I take the approach when I get to the green, that's kind of when the fun starts. That's when the party starts. And that's when I like, you know, stop caring, just have fun with it. Stuff like that. Just a lot of phrases kind of, stick in my head when it comes to putting, but basically just, you know, care less, and have fun with it. I'm not going like, oh, I have to make this putt. I have to make this putt. Like, this is a putt I should make. I'm trying to make the putt without thinking of making the putt, if that makes sense. I'm so deep into my process of, okay, this is the ball mark I'm starting at, I'm putting it around this. And like, that's, you know, it's going to require this speed. And like, you know, I'm trying to make the putt, but I'm not over it, like clinching the putter thinking like, okay, this is a putt I have to make. So I've become really accepting. I've just become in my own little process world. And it's been a lot of fun. And crazy thing is, I feel like I can still get a lot better with my putting.
Well, you went to the University of Virginia. I think Dr. Bob Rotella has been associated with UVA for a long time. Is that how you got to know him? And how often do you talk with him?
Yeah. So we would see him as a team a couple times a semester. He's been great. We used to go over and, you know, just sit in his basement and kind of talk with the team for, you know, a couple hours, just asking him questions. He'd answer anything. And I saw him a handful of times individually there. And now I talk to him on the phone, not regularly, but, you know, a couple times a month here and there. You know, if I'm going back out for a stretch and I, you know, something doesn't feel comfortable or my mindset's not exactly in the right place, I know what he's going to say, but I just love talking to him. Like, I just feel like when I talk to him for even just a couple minutes, like, I feel better getting off the phone with him. He keeps it very simple. He puts it right out in front of me. And I love talking to him. He's very easygoing. And I love some of the key phrases he likes to use, just kind of stick in my head and feel like I'm kind of, you know, going into a big tournament or moment, I'm kind of, you know, reiterating some of those things, in my head while I'm playing.
Yeah. I was going to say along the lines of what you were talking about with just not necessarily not caring, but not letting the pressure get to you. That must be a great feeling at tense moments when you're engrossed in the process and not concerned or freaked out or whatever by, man, I got to make this putt. There's so much riding on the line. It must give you a lot of kind of sense of calm, I would imagine, in the moment.
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, listen, at the end of the day, we've done this so many times. So sometimes just, you know, we're obviously very close to the situation out there. You know, we build up all this pressure on our own thinking about a bunch of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, it's something we do all the time. And it's, you know, you just got to kind of dumb it down to, okay, this is just like any other 8-iron I've hit. It's just to, you know, get really honed in on your target. Sometimes, you know, especially in pressure packed moments, you know, picking really small targets and really, really small targets, whether it's a branch on a tree, that way your misses are going to be very, very small. And I find that, you know, a lot of the stuff that he's told me has really helped. And I feel like I've done a much better job. I used to be a little more up tempo, fast paced, fast walking. I feel like I've been able to slow it down in those, in some of those situations, and, you know, still work in progress. I still think I can get a lot better mentally and in certain situations and controlling my emotions out there. It's come a long way, but I feel like I can get a lot better still.
Last one for me, Denny. I heard a lot about your basketball ability. What's the best or coolest basketball moment you had while playing basketball?
Man, I loved basketball. That was probably my first love. I just, you know, being 5'8", that was just never going to translate
to not a good idea. Not a good idea, Denny.
I love basketball and baseball, but I was just obviously, it got to a certain point where I knew I wasn't really going to grow anymore and golf was going to be the sport. But, man, basketball was so much fun growing up. You know, I had pretty much the same team K through eighth grade. And we would play, you know, we had our Catholic CYO league, we had a intramural league, and we had like a Rising Star league. There was times where I was playing on three different basketball teams in a season. Wow. Obviously growing up in Maryland, I wouldn't even play golf in the winter. You know, I'd put the clubs down for 4 months and play basketball. And I did that all the way up until college. So, we won a city championship in eighth grade. That was a great memory for me and some of my, grade school buddies. We beat some guys that are in the NBA now. So it's kind of fun to, you know, look back at that and be like, man, we're a good team together. We all shot the ball well, we could all shoot threes. Like, we were just a really fun team. It was really fun to be a part of. And then high school basketball, I had some great memories. Like, I played freshman and JV my first couple of years, great memories. And then, you know, I was probably eighth or ninth man my junior year. And we had, you know, probably four or five D1 players on the team basketball. I wasn't really going to see much time. And, coach stuck me in one game. I think it was our home Christmas tournament. And, you know, our assistant coach was always advocating, coach, got to put Denny in. We need shooters in there. And finally they put me in one game and let me go. And I was like 6 of 8 from the 3-point line. I made 6 threes. And then from that point on, I kind of moved to, like, you know, I was like sixth man the rest of the year. And in a year I thought I wasn't really going to play much, they found out I could shoot. And, you know, we had a great point guard going to Georgetown, so he was able to draw defenders. And I got a lot of open shots that year, and I worked well with that team. And so that was a lot of fun for me. I miss those years playing basketball. I still shoot around a decent amount, but obviously don't play any pickup. Probably wouldn't be the smartest thing to be doing.
Right. Let me share with you my basketball nightmare that I still suffer from, even though it's been many, many, many moons ago. And I was all excited because we were going to be playing our rival that evening. Our coach said, I want everybody at lunchtime to come in and shoot foul shots. Take 25 shots. Well, I made all 25. I went to 35, 45, 55, got up to 57, and I missed. Then I went in the game that night, and I was 0 for 12 from the foul line.
Oh, my gosh.
So, You wore yourself out with all, were those consecutive free throws you made, Bob?
Consecutive.
Wow.
Man, oh man.
Wow. That's impressive. The 57 part's impressive. The other part's not very impressive.
Thank you, sir.
Exactly.
Well, actually, it is impressive in its own way that you can make 57 and then go miss 12 in a row. That is actually impressive.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Anytime you can say something like that to Bob Bupka, I love it. We're starting to wind down a bit here with Denny McCarthy on Musings on Golf. Hey, you mentioned, playing with guys who went on and basketball wise to play in the NBA or at that level. For you, when you joined the PGA Tour, to actually be on the range playing golf and seeing Tiger Woods, seeing Rory McIlroy, what was that like for a guy relatively, you know, not that long out of college, and all of a sudden you're in the same playing fields with the guys you'd seen on TV? Was that in any way, shape, or form intimidating?
A little bit. I still think everybody, when they see Tiger, is like, oh my gosh, like, you know, that's Tiger. There's Tiger. Like, it's, you know, all the fans, even the players, I feel like still do that. Even some of the big guys, when they see Tiger, I feel like it's like, you know, where's Tiger? If Tiger's at an event, like, you're just, so I would say he was definitely the one that's like, oh man, I'm definitely starstruck a little bit. Like, definitely got like a little nervous around him. You know, like guys like Rory, Rory's great. You know, he's being MC, you know, our lockers are right next to each other at all these events. So I've talked to Rory a decent amount over the last few years, played with him at the Players a couple of years ago. We both made the cut on the number. We didn't play that great the first few rounds. And we, you know, played, we were like last group off 10 in a twosome, and it was just me and Rory. And we talked the whole time we were waiting. You know, he was great. Like, I wasn't intimidated by him, but at the same time, I mean, I respect him a ton, and, you know,
yeah,
I really admire his golf game. Hitting, you know, watching Rory hit a ball up close in person for 18 holes is a must watch experience. Cause it's, I don't know if there's been another guy in the game that quite moves like that and hits the ball like that, especially for his size, which is crazy too. We're basically the same height, and
yeah,
he's able to do that with the golf ball. It's just really impressive. Nobody quite moves like Rory. He does some extraordinary things with his body and how he's able to move to hit the golf ball. So, yeah, I think, you know, Tiger definitely starstruck me, and, you know, there's a couple other guys here and there, but now I just, early on, yeah, I was like, okay, there's Jason Day. There's, you know, some of these guys were my age though. Like, you know, I know Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. They're my high school
true.
Class.
So, yeah. They, right.
These guys were some of the stars when I, you know, they still are some of the stars when I was coming out. So it wasn't too like crazy for me because, like, you know, I've played a lot of golf with Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, and they're ranked fourth and fifth in the world at the time, whatever it may be. Jordan was number one at the time, I think, when I came out. And so it wasn't like that strange to me, just because they're my age and I played a bunch with them. So, if anything, it was more motivating. Like, man, these guys have risen to the top of the game. I feel like I can do this. And that's something that I've always done well at. I feel like I'm a very visual learner. And
right.
So the top guys that I play with, I can kind of, you know, take bits and pieces of some of these guys' games that you know, whatever they do really well. I'm like, okay, maybe I think I need to incorporate some of this into my game here and there. And so I really enjoy being around the elite performers just because I feel like you can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Denny, what's a typical week like for you for a PGA Tour week? Not necessarily a major championship because the dynamics are different, but when do you typically get to a site? How many holes you play in practice rounds? And then what's it like once the competition begins on a Thursday?
Yeah, typically it depends if I'm coming from the tournament before or home. Usually get there Monday morning, midday. And I like to play. So usually we have, a 9-hole pro-am on Wednesday. So I like to play that 9 holes on Monday just so I can get a little more detailed look at that 9 holes. It's just tough to do everything in the pro-am. You're entertaining your pro-am group. You're not able to hit all the little shots that you want to. So spending time around the greens on that 9 holes on Monday and then playing whatever side, the other side on Tuesday, basically. So I get 2 good detailed looks at both nines, hitting some of the, maybe some of the putts, quirky putts we have noted in our yardage book to certain pins. Like, hey, remember this putt doesn't break here. It looks like it does, but it doesn't. Just hitting some of those types of putts, some of the chips that you're likely to have maybe just off the greens on some of the longer par fours.
Right.
So making sure you're just getting a good feel. You've hit all these shots before in the previous practice rounds, but just kind of refamiliarizing yourself with, the green, the areas around the greens, the green surrounds. And then just kind of highlighting maybe what is of most importance that week. So say like Memorial, for example, iron play is very important, but you also need to drive the ball well there to get those iron plays. So I spent a decent amount of time getting comfortable with my driver, making sure I got some extra reps with the driver because it's a lot of drivers out there for me. Making sure that I'm comfortable with most of the tee shots, hitting maybe a specialty shot for a certain tee shot, making sure I'm comfortable with that tee shot. I'm just really honing in on my yardages. I'm going to have a lot of 7 or 8 irons at Memorial. So just getting really dialed with the feel of my 7 and 8 iron and certain distances, 160, 165, 170, just whatever that course calls for that week that, I think is going to be really important for my team, working on those things, maybe a little bit extra that week.
Hey, Bob, final question for me. And Denny, I know you're still seeking that first win on the PGA Tour, oh so close at Memorial this year. What going into to next season when things kick off in January, what do you need to do? What's that hump that you need to get over to get that first win and get that momentum that would come from it?
I think just a little improvement from this year. I mean, I was close a couple times this year. Like you said, I had a close call at Memorial. It's not like I gave that tournament away. I mean, I led that tournament, almost all day Sunday, and felt really comfortable in that position. I felt like, that was my tournament to win, and unfortunately just didn't get it done. That happens. I hadn't quite been, I'd been knocking at the door and a lot of, fourth, fifth, sixth finishes, a couple shots here or there, but that one was, I was right there. That was fully in contention coming down the wire. And I felt great in that moment. Like I felt like I was going to win the tournament. I was a little nervous, but like a good nervous, a nervous that makes me even more focused. And I felt really, my focus felt really heightened that day. I was seeing things well. I didn't hit the ball like amazing that day, but I have a really good feel for certain golf courses now that I've played them a bunch. So just feel like I've done a really good job of managing my game around certain places on the PGA Tour. Now, even when I don't have my best stuff, I know how to maybe scrape and claw, instead of shooting a couple over, shooting a couple under, finding ways to just keep some of those rounds early in the week together. And maybe sometimes that's really the difference. Sometimes you might just be a couple shots too far back going into Sunday. And sometimes those early shots on Thursday and Friday matter more than more than people think.
Yeah.
Been a handful of times where I play great on Saturday and maybe a couple back, three or four back going into Sunday and play a good round Sunday. It just wasn't quite enough. And then it was, you know, you go back and look at the drawing board, you're like, man, I bogeyed a par five on Thursday. And it, you know, when I was in good position, that really killed me. There's so many things that go into it. It's not just Sunday. There's things leading up to the whole, you know, Thursday, Friday that, you know, that you did a couple things that maybe you wish you would like to have back. But I think just continuing to put myself in that situation. I know that once I get there, I do feel comfortable. It is, you know, you're nervous and you have an adrenaline rush, but it's a good nervous. It's a nervous that I've been in many times. I get nervous sometimes when I have, you know, playing close ping pong games with my buddies. You know, it's like, it's the same kind of nerves. It's just how can you control them and use them to your advantage? And I feel like I do that pretty well. And, you know, I had a couple really good learning experiences this year, and hopefully I can learn from them and knock the door down this next year.
Absolutely. I'll turn it over to Bob to close this out. Robert?
Yeah, well, I can't thank you enough for joining us on Musings on Golf. I think what you had to say was very enlightening, and I'm sure our listeners got a big kick out of that. And the only thing I'll leave you with, Denny, I just hope that in your future there are a lot more lip-ins than lip-outs.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Hey, Bob, I'm with you, and listening to that interview with Denny, I'm a big follower of guys who just work so hard at the game and love it and grind it out. He's been close, man. He's been close at the PGA Championship. He's been close at the U.S. Open. He hasn't yet won on the PGA Tour, Bob, but I'd like to think 2024 is going to be the first year breaking out and winning on the PGA Tour for Denny McCarthy.
Well, with his putting stroke, I totally agree with you. And there's really two things that you need to possess if you want to play at the highest level in professional golf. You need a work ethic unparalleled, and you need heart. You got to love it. And it's going to be 100 degrees out there. You're going to be sweating bullets, but you're going to want to stay there because your quest for getting better is never to be satisfied. And I agree with you. I think Denny McCarthy is headed for that winner's circle come next season.
Well, we thank Denny McCarthy very much for joining us here on Musings on Golf. A lot more to discuss about Ryder Cup in the weeks coming up as we get ready for the 44th version of the Ryder Cup in Italy. Kelly Elbin along with my good friend Bob Bupka signing off. Thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf.